that the pole held straight out. He sped across the road, then dipping the pole into the ditch, he levered upwards and out. Martin saw the pole bend, carrying Gonf high into the air. The momentum swung him easily across the ditch. He landed lightly on his paws and pushed the pole back to the mole. Dinny held it gingerly, whispering to Martin,
"Mercy, O Yates, a leaving old earth. 'Tis only birds be so foolhardy. Ah, well, here I go!"
Dinny performed a waddling little shuffle, jabbed the pole into the ditch and rose slowly into the air. The impetus was not sufficient to carry him across. He wavered in the air and began dropping back. Martin made a mad dash, catching the pole low down. He thrust against it and whipped back with all his force. Dinny was catapulted away from the pole across the ditch. He hit the far bank near the top and was grabbed by Gonf, who helped him to scrabble out. Dinny lay kissing the grass, thankful to be back on firm ground. Martin's strength and fearlessness helped him to make the crossing with ease. He quite enjoyed the sensation of flying through the air. When Dinny was fully recovered, they commenced their journey into the flatlands. They were not long gone when Blacktooth yawned and stretched himself in the ditch. The trackers had camped a short distance south of the vaulting area. Splitnose rolled over in his sleep and slid from the narrow strip of dry bottom into the slimy, shallow water.
You lousy vermin! Who did that? Come on, own up!
You did it yourself, Puddin'head! It's a wonder you never carried on snoring.
What, me? Snoring? Have you ever heard yourself? Sounds like a goose gargling.
Rubbish! I never slept a wink. Oh, I dropped off for a moment or two a while back. Funny, though. I dreamed I saw a mouse just up that way a piece. Guess what? He flew across the ditch.
He wasn't followed by Clad pretending to be a swallow, was he?
Ha! You can laugh, Fatty, but it was almost as if I was awake. The mouse flew, I tell you.
Fatty yourself. That's what you get for hogging all those rations last night. It was a nightmare brought on by pure greed.
It was not. It was more like a daymare brought on by the hunger. I'm starving.
Scratch ignored their arguing. Pulling himself from the ditch, he took a chunk of bread from his pack and began munching it. Splitnose and Blacktooth stopped fighting to complain.
Oi! That's not fair! You're supposed to be the leader! It's up to you to see we're properly fed!
That's right! I've only got a stingy little bit of crust and it's sopping wet from that stinking ditch water.
Contemptuously Scratch threw a crust on the bank edge.
There you are. First I'll get it.
The ferret and the stoat fought tooth and claw. They kicked each other down in an effort to be first out of the ditch. Blacktooth won. He grabbed the crust as Splitnose wailed piteously.
Give me some, Blackie. Go on. I'd give you half if I had bread.
No, you wouldn't, stoat face.
Yes, I would.
Wouldn't.
Would.
Blacktooth relented with bad grace.
Oh, here, Scringe Tail. Don't pick it all down in one gobful.
Oh, that's not fair. You've got the biggest half.
Scratch had wandered further up the bank. He chewed on a young dandelion, pulled a face, spat it out and shouted,
Oi, you two, stop bellyaching and look at this.
They ambled up, chewing the last of the crust.
What is it?
Scratch shook his head in despair.
What you think it is, loaf brains? Look, it's the track of those two mice and the mole. See here and here, the paw prints are as clear as day. They're travelling west.
Splitnose found the pole and held it up triumphantly.
Aha! Another clue. They must have used this to climb out of the ditch on.
Oh, chuck it away, Boldernose.
Scratch sneered.
You'll be telling me next that they used it to fly through the air on. Come on, you two. At least we're on their trail.
From the topmost branches of a beech on the south side of Katia, Chib checked the straps on his pack before flying off to the cells. Brush and Birch watched him, flying into the thin dawn light. Then Brush readied the next pack.
Shouldn't take too long, and we can nip back and see how the battle's going.
Birch looked to his quiver.
Well, I'm nearly out of arrows. Bet the others are too. Tell you what, you stay here and see to the robin while I swing back to base. I'll gather all the arrows I can lay my paws on from the stores and take them to our archers.
Good idea. See you later, mate.
Around the back of the elm, it was only a short distance from the heavy loam of the woodlands. Formal led the little party, Columbine and Ben bringing up the rear with Soil Flyer, a champion young digging mole.
Only a little ways now, gaffers.
He chuckled secretively.
Us diggers do have a fine tunnel awaiting for you to escape through.
Gratefully, they were helped into the broad tunnel dug by the moles. As they progressed along it, Columbine could hear Soil Flyer filling in behind them. Up ahead, Formal said comfortingly to some mice,
"Never ye fear, little good beasts. We may go into mole deep. None may find either."
Samina's determination was unabated. She pushed her forces ruthlessly forward.
"Come on! Can't you see they aren't sending over as many arrows or stones? Keep going! We've got them!"
Fortunata's ear throbbed unmercifully. The vixen was lucky that the arrow had not struck a bit lower, or it would have been her skull. Clamping a pawful of her own herbs to the wound, she looked up dismally as a large squirrel swung in, laden with quivers of arrows. The fox dropped back a few paces, muttering beneath her breath,
"If you think you've got them, milady, then go and get them yourself."
Two of Skipper's crew were driving long, sharp stakes into the ground at the base of the elm trunk. Earth had been piled around the stakes, and leafy branches scattered on top. From a distance, it looked for all the world like a crew of otters lying in wait, armed with spears. The newly arrived arrows drove the Katir soldiers back a short distance, despite Sarmina's threats and blandishments. Lady Amber checked to see that the moles had got away with their charges.
"Is it ready, Skip?"
Skipper held up a paw.
"As ready as it'll ever be, ma'am."
"Good. We'll fire a last couple of heavy salvos while you slip off with the crew. See you back at Brockhall."
"Aye, good hunting, ma'am. Come on, crew."
Once again, Amber's tail stood up straight.
"Archers, fire!"
Sarmina and Clud heard the command.
"Down flat, keep your heads down, shields up!"
Clud bellowed to the soldiers. When the invaders lifted their heads, the otters were gone. There followed an eerie silence, broken only by the rustle of the treetops. Sarmina knew this was the squirrels retreating. She straightened up and ventured to pace forward. Clud joined her.
"Bunch of cowards, eh, my lady? Looks like they've run away."
Sarmina peered toward the mound at the base of the elm.
"Maybe, maybe not. I think they might have set up some sort of trap. Or is that a crew of otters armed with spears? Take 10 soldiers and investigate it, Clud. Go on. We're here to back you up."
Reluctantly, Clud selected 10 creatures and set off gingerly for the enemy lines. He ducked once or twice when someone stepped on a twig. Finally, he arrived at the mound. Knowing the danger had passed, Clud kicked at a leafy bough and prodded the mound with his spear.
"All clear, my lady. It was only a stupid trick to make us think they were still here."
"What about the squirrels, Clud?"
Fortunata sounded cautious. The weasel captain peered upward into the elm branches, then hailed his spear straight up. Several soldiers dodged out of the way as it landed back, point up in the mound. A small amount of twigs and leaves fell with it.
"Not a hide nor hair of the lily-livered bunch."
Clud puffed his chest out as he retrieved his spear. Relieved and exultant, the soldiers of Katir rose up, cheering and stamping about in a victory dance.
"We won! We won!
Won what?"
Sarmina's voice rose angrily above the celebration.
"Fools! Can't you see it's an empty triumph? No plunder, no slaves, no submission. They vanished completely, and what have we gained? A few yards of woodland that belongs to me anyway."
The sudden volley of arrows slashed down, taking them unawares. Soldiers threw up shields, diving headlong for the undergrowth. Even the wildcat queen had to beat an undignified retreat behind the elm tree she had conquered. Once again, the chattering, derisory laughter of squirrels as they swung off into the fastnesses of Mossflower was all that remained of the woodlanders. Gingivere had enlarged the two holes so that Ferdy and Cogs were able to squeeze through into his cell. Gleefully, they obtained the contents of the first pack.
"Good old Mum's apple pie.
Ooh, elderberry cordial.
Look, cheese and hazelnuts.
Candy chestnuts too. I bet old Jim didn't know about them.
Come on, Mr. Gingivere. Here's some seed cake and milk. Let's have a secret supper together. Then you can tell us the news from Chib."
Amidst the laughter, Gingivere brushed away a tear from his eye. He was delighted with the company of his two little hedgehog friends after the long, lonely confinement following his father's death. It was noontide when Martin and Dinny sat down to rest. Gonf stood surveying the vastness that surrounded them, undulating plain, flatland and moorland, stretched away into the distance. The far horizon danced and shimmered in the unseasonal heat. Gonf thought he could detect a smudge on the horizon, but he could not be sure until they had travelled further. The mouse thief turned, looking back to where they had come from.
"Well, mateys, it's certainly a big wide world outside the woodlands and good old Mossflower. I can still glimpse it back there."
Dinny lay back, chewing a blade of grass.
And can he still see yon little mouse maid a-waving to he?"
Gonk shielded his eyes with his paw and played along.
"Why, yes, and there's someone else too. It looks like your grandad waving his stick. He wants that deeper than ever pie you stole from him."
"That wasn't Dinny,"
Martin yawned.
"Oh, you probably stole it. See anything else?"
Gonf's whiskers twitched.
"Ah, those three vermin that are tracking us. Looks like they've picked up our trail, matey."
Martin and Dinny leapt up, staring in the direction Gonf was pointing.
"There, see? A weasel, a ferret and a stoat. Now they've started to run. Why are they in a hurry all of a sudden?"
"Probably cos they'm sighted us and now we stood up,"
Dinny suggested.
"Aye, matey, you're right. Well, what do we do now, warrior? Stand and fight. You just say the word."
Martin gnawed his lip, stopping his paw from straying to the otter sling bound about his middle.
"No, that's not what we're questing for. We'd be losing valuable time. It's our duty to find Salomon Dastron and Boar the Fighter, so that he can return with us to save Mossflower. The first thing a warrior must learn is orders and duty."
Gonf strapped his pack back on. Dinny had not removed his. He was away and running, small velvety paws pounding the grassland.
"Come on, ye two,"
he called.
"Uzzins can lose thy vermin afore eventide."
The three friends ran in silence, measuring their stride and conserving energy. All that could be heard above the drumming of the paws was a descending lark and the chirrup of grasshoppers in the dry grassland warmth. The high sun above watched the scene like a great golden eye. The hunter jogged steadily on, with the hunters rushing behind to close the gap. There was no infirmary for the wounded at Kateer. Soldiers lay about in the barracks, licking their hurts and tending to themselves as best as they could. Clud was quite pleased with himself. They had driven off the woodlanders, and the army had not retreated. So what was all the fuss about? He put the question to Ashleg.
"Try telling her that, weasel. Here she comes."
The pine marten's cloak swirled about as he pointed to the stairs. Samina bounded into the barracks, crooking a claw at them.
"You two, up to my room, right away."
There was little to be gained by arguing, so at sinking hearts, they trooped up the stairway. Fortunata was already there, her ear painfully swollen from the arrow wound. Ashleg could not resist a sly snigger.
"Looks like you need a healer, Fox."
Samina swept in just in time to hear the jibe.
"One more remark like that, wooden pin, and you'll need a new head. Now, what happened to my ambush in the woods?"
They stood dumbly, waiting for the storm to break. It was not long in coming. The wildcat queen cleared the table in one reckless sweep. Bell, dishes, ornaments, linen and food crashed to the floor.
"Nothing! That's what we gained from it all."
She raged around the chamber, kicking over furniture, tearing at wall hangings and bending fire irons out of shape as her voice rose to a maddened howl.
"I saw them! Me! I set up the ambush, warned you, marshalled the army, led the charge, and thought that you buffoons had the brains and courage to assist me. What did I receive? Not one original idea or scrap of encouragement."
Her whole body quivered with dangerous temper. Then suddenly she slumped into a chair, as if temporarily exhausted by her outburst. The quaking trio stood staring at the floor for inspiration as she scowled at them.
"Ah, what business is it of yours anyway? You're not supposed to think, only to carry out orders. It's my job to do all the brain work around here. I suppose nothing will bother you three until the food supplies run out. Oh, they won't last forever, you know. I've seen for myself. The stores are getting lower since we were unable to levy tribute from the few that lived around our walls. That's the trouble with being a conqueror and having an army to feed. Soldiers are no good at providing anything unless they can snatch it away from the helpless.
She stretched and kicked moodily at a fallen goblet.
Well, any ideas?
There's always the two prisoners I caught, m'lady.
Clud sounded half apologetic. Samina sat bolt upright.
Of course! Well done, Weasel. Maybe you aren't as stupid as I thought. Prisoners! Yes. What do you think the woodlanders would pay as ransom for those young hedgehogs?
Fortunata narrowed her eyes calculatingly.
Well, I've had more dealings with woodlanders than most. They're a soft, sentimental lot when it comes to young ones. I think that they'd give quite a bit to get them back safe.
Safe? That's the key.
Samina purred happily.
Imagine if the woodlanders saw their babies exposed to real suffering or danger. We could practically name our own terms.
The trio relaxed visibly, now that the Queen was in a saner mood. There was one other listener to the conversation who had no cause to rejoice. Chib the Robin, perched on the outside window ledge. Splitnose was the first to slacken pace. He gradually slowed to an easy lope. Blacktooth joined him, leaving Scratch to make the running. The weasel stopped and turned. He curled his lip in disgust at the pair, who were now sitting on the grass panting. Scratch ran back, energetically, drawing his dagger.
Get up, you idle worms! Come on, up on your paws, both of you!
Splitnose teased a passing ant with his claws.
Oh, what's the point? They're well away. We'll never catch them now.
Scratch kicked out of Blacktooth.
I suppose you think the same, lazy bones.
Blacktooth kicked back insolently.
Oh, give it a rest. You can't make us run.
Right. So it's mutiny, eh?
Scratch looked from one to the other disdainfully.
Then, here's something for you two buckos to think about. One, if you don't get running, I'll stab the pair of you. Two, unless you decide to run, I won't share my rations with you. And three, think about when I make my report. The Queen will be pleased to hear how you two lay down on the job.
Wordlessly, they rose and started running again. Gonf trotted alongside his friends, his quick eye noting the landscape.
It gets a bit hilly further on, mateys. We could drop down and hide in a dozen places. What do you say? Shall we give them the slip?
Martin glanced backward.
I'd rather not risk it. They've got us in plain view. No, best keep on until evening. Then we can pick a good hiding place when it's dark and camp there the night. Are you all right, Dinny?
The mole wrinkled his snout.
Don't like a running. Lucky I'm stronger than most. You keep a going, Martin. Don't worry over I.
The noon sun gained intensity. Birds soaring on the upper thermals passed over the six tiny figures below. Hunters and hunted. To spur themselves on, Splitnose and Blacktooth played the game, shouting out their favourite dishes to each other. Scratch ran a length behind them, keeping his dagger drawn as an insurance against further rebellion. Despite himself, the weasel had to keep licking his lips, not being able to shut his ears against the ferret and the stoat.
Some of those candy chestnuts and a flagon of cold cider. Could you manage that, Blackie?
How could I? How about a baby trout grilled in butter with some of that woodland October ale?
Very nice. But have you tried a blackberry muffin soaked in warm honey with a few beakers of iced strawberry cordial to wash them down?
Oh, stop it, Splitty! You're reminding me of that time when old Lord Green Eyes had a plunder feast at Katia. Those were the days. I had iced strawberry cordial in a big drinking bowl with mint leaves floating on it and crushed raspberries too. I remember I sucked it all through a corn straw. Oh, I must have sucked enough of it to have a good bath in.
Scratch called out in disgust.
I was enjoying that until I had a vision of you all covered in mud and muck, sitting in a bath of iced strawberry cordial with two mint leaves stuck for your snout and a pile of crushed raspberries shoved into your ears doesn't bear thinking about. Anyhow, why don't you two shut your traps and keep your eyes on those three ahead?
Dinny was first to gain the low hills. He ran up one side and rolled down the other. Martin and Gonf joined in until all three were dizzy. They ran onward as the shadows began to lengthen. Gonf gradually dropped back. He was breathing heavily. When they turned to look, he waved his paws.
Keep going, mateys. This is much harder work than thieving.
Without hurting Gonf's feelings, they slacked the pace to match his. Martin noticed that the blob on the horizon they had seen earlier that day was not merely a low cloud bank.
Look, Gonf, it's a range of mountains. Big ones, too. What do you think, Din?
The young mole squinted hard to bring the view into perspective.
Oh, boyer, that they be. I reckons that be where the teeth of land reaches up to eat woolen sheeps with they girt heads in clouds.
Clever, Dinny, mate.
Gonf nodded admiringly.
Exactly as the poem says, a farther teeth of land rise up to bite the wool of sheep. They look quite close, but don't let that fool you. We've got a fair bit of travelling to do before we reach them.
Dinny risked a backward glance through a fold in the hills.
They vermin bags be none closer either. Spectres uns be mightier runners.
Scratch had taken the lead again. He knew the others were hungry and sure to follow. Trying to keep their quarry in sight was difficult, as they were often hidden by the hills. Descending the first low hill, he stopped to extract a bear from his pad. The other two ran slap bang into him from behind.
Clodhoppers,
he shouted.
How is it that you have all this open country to run in, yet you both manage to crash into me? What do you think this is? A game of leapfrog?
More bickering and backbiting ensued. Scratch ended the dispute by banging their heads together.
Look, it's nearly dark now and I've gone and lost them thanks to you two oafs.
He gritted his teeth in frustration. Martin and Gonf prepared the evening meal, while Dinny enlarged a small hole on the far side of the final hill. In a short while, they were happily installed in a superb little cave. Dinny had even dug a ledge halfway round for them to rest on. The three friends lay on the ledge, eating their supper and watching the crimson underbellies of purple cloud rolls as night took over from the long hot day. Scratch and his minions sat out in the open on top of the highest hill, hoping that they might catch sight of the others at next daybreak. Night on the open lands was both cold and windy. Chib paced the mantelpiece at Brock Hall, relating all he had heard at Kater. The Corrin were worried by this new threat to Ferdy and Cogs.
This is an unwelcome development.
Lady Amber waved her bushy tail anxiously. The robin ruffled his crimson breast feathers importantly.
On the surface, it would appear to be so. However, our wildcat ally in the prison said to tell you that he may be able to forestall Sir Mina's plans a while.
Bella looked up to the mantelpiece.
How will he manage that, Chib?
The robin folded his wings behind as he explained.
Well, excuse me, Gingivere has taken a stone from the walls on each cell, as you know. He proposes to hide both Ferdy and Cogs in his own cell after sealing the wall holes up. That way, if the enemy do not think of searching his cell too closely, they will naturally suppose that the two prisoners have escaped.
There was wholesale approval for the clever plan. Skipper had an additional idea.
Hark now! What if we was to pretend that Ferdy and Cogs were safe with us? That'd take suspicion off Gingivere.
How will we manage that, Skip?
Bella was curious to know.
Easy, marm. We'll find two other little hedgehogs and disguise them, then let them be seen by someone from Kater.
Good thinking, Skipper.
Bella said with approval.
But now we'll really have to think of how we can rescue Ferdy and Cogs. Gingivere's plan is brave and daring. However, it puts all three at great risk.
Lady Amber shook her head.
Where do we get two little ones that look like Ferdy and Cox?
Well, you may lend my little Spike and Posy.
Goody said from the doorway.
Long as they don't come to no harm. Though I must say, they don't look a smidgen like my Ferdy and Cogs. I can tell my little ones apart like apples from nuts.
Abbess Germaine tapped a paw to her nose.
Two blanket cloaks, two saucepan helmets, a piece of stick each, like the swords of make-believe warriors. I think that would fool anyone from a distance, Goody. But what about a rescue attempt? Have we any kind of firm plan?
You leave that to old Skip, marm.
Skipper laughed dryly.
Bula, you take charge of the crew while I'm away. I think I'll pay the mask a visit.
What's the mask?
Several woodlanders voiced the question.
You'll soon see.
Bula winked.
Chapter
Chapter 22. Consternation reigned at Katia. A luckless stoat had been volunteered from the cell guards by Fortune Arthur and Clud, and he was pushed unwillingly into Sarmina's chamber.
Your match of the Green Queenest, upper of all ruler and lower moss, the prisoners have gone!
Gone? What do you mean, gone?
The Wildcat Queen left the seat in a single bound and picked the stoat up by his throat.
Escaped!
Sarmina threw the gurgling heap to the floor. Her voice echoed in the stairway as she dashed down to the cells.
Escaped? Impossible! Guards, get down to the cells, quickly!
The cells were searched. The corridors were scoured. The outer walls were surrounded. The parade ground was gone over inch by inch. The barracks were turned inside out. Not a room, passage, cupboard, chamber, kitchen, guardhouse or scullery remained unprobed. Gingivere, however, was officially non-existent. His cell was not searched. Nobody thought of looking in a prison cell that was already bolted and barred. Except, maybe, Sarmina. Columbine sat up, rubbing sleep from her eyes. Was it night or day, she wondered. How long had she slept in this warm, dry cavern? Everything seemed so quiet and peaceful after the noise and panic of the battle she had witnessed. There was an old patchwork quilt covering her. She pushed it to one side as a little mole maid entered.
Morning, Tilly. Welcome to Moldeep. Breakfast be ready.
She followed the mole into a larger cave, where Ben Stickle and the woodlanders, who had been injured, sat with the loam hedge mice and the mole community. Formole waved her to a place between himself and a grizzled old mole whose fur was completely grey.
Steady by your maid. This be old Dinny, tell the young rip's grandfer.
Old Dinny nodded and continued spooning honeyed oatmeal. Obviously, the moles liked a good solid start to the day. There was a variety of cooked roots and tubers, most of which Columbine had never seen before. All of them tasted delicious, whether salted, sugared or dipped in honey and milk. Some of the moles did all four. The bread was wafer thin and tasted of almonds. Small cakes patterned with buttercups were served warm. There were fluffy napkins and bowls of steaming rose water to cleanse sticky paws. As Columbine nibbled at a rye biscuit and sipped fragrant mint tea, she could not help asking Formole where all the huge, deeper-than-ever pies and solid trencher food the moles seemed to favour were. Formole chuckled. He gestured at the table with a massive digging claw.
Oh, Combulaini, this year be only a light breakfast for you and your friends. We'm fancied it up a bit for you. Moles be only eating solid victuals at eventide when they's hungered greatly.
Columbine nodded and smiled politely, trying to hide her amazement.
Oh, I say, just a light breakfast. Light breakfast.
As Columbine ate, she remembered Gomf. If only he were here amid this friendly company with her. She mentally wagered with herself that he would know the name and taste of every dish, and probably be jokingly chided for having stole many of them in bygone days. She pictured her mouse thief, jesting with everybody, imitating mole speech, and singing ballads as he composed them. The young mousemaid heaved a sigh into her mint tea. It dissolved in a small cloud of fragrant steam. Where, oh where, was Gonf on this beautiful morning? It was nearly mid-morning when the light breakfast reached its conclusion. Then, guarded and guided by the mole community, Columbine and her friends made their way back to Brockhall by a secret woodland route. Martin, Gonf and Dinny were wide awake by daybreak. They crouched in the small cave, eating breakfast, as they watched the grey, drizzly dawn. Packing the food away, the travellers stamped life back into their numbed paws. Surprisingly, Gonf was first to step outside.
Come on, mateys. It'll brighten up by mid-morning. You wait and see. I'm a prince of predictors.
Striding out, they left the low hills behind to face yet more flatlands. Wakened grouse whirred into the damp morning air at their approach.
Salamandastron, look where we've come from. Three of Mossflower's best, marching out upon our quest.
Salamandastron.
Scratch sighted the three dim forms through the layers of drizzling rain.
There they go. Come on, you two. I've got a feeling that today's the day we catch him. Come on, move yourselves. The sooner it's done, the quicker we'll get back to cut here. Aye, good solid food again. A long rest, and maybe a bit of honour and glory.
Oh, I'm soaked right through.
Splitnose complained.
Me too,
grumbled Blacktooth.
I never slept a wink again. Sitting out on top of a hill, miles from anywhere in the pouring rain, stiff all over, cold, hungry,
Shut up!
Scratch interrupted bitterly.
Put a button in your drivelling lip. Look at me. I'm weary, saturated and starved. But do you hear me whimpering on about it all the time? Up on your paws and try to look like you're the Queen's soldiers from Katia.
They trekked westward, pursuing the travellers. Splitnose was muttering as he kicked a pebble along in front of himself.
Honour and glory. Clod will get all that, and he can keep it too. Now, if it was on a cake and a mug of hot glory, that'd be a different thing.
On a cake and hot glory drink? Don't talk such rubbish, soggy head!
Blacktooth laughed.
Soggy head yourself, drippy nose!
Crinkle claws!
Greasy fur!
Beetle bottom!
Stop the gab and get marching, both of you!
Scratch told them. True to Gomp's prediction, the rain ceased. Above the plains, the sun came out to watch fluffy clouds sailing about on the breeze across a lake of bright blue sky. Dinny sniffed the air, wiggling his claws.
Boo-ar! There's water nearby, lightly a pond or tarn. Mayhap us'll catch a little fish. Be good eating her.
Martin looked sideways at Gomph.
How does he know there's water near? I can't smell a thing.
The mouse thief shrugged.
Neither can he, matey. Moles probably feel it through the earth with their digging claws.
Dinny nodded wisely.
Boo-ar! Us'ns do smell lots of things with us claws.
Gomph winked at the warrior mouse.
That's the nice thing about moles. They always have a sensible explanation which we can all understand.
The three friends laughed aloud. Dinny proved as good at predicting as Gomph. Midday found the travellers at the edge of a large pond. Bulrushes and reeds surrounded the margin. Small water lilies budded on the surface. The glint of silver scales beneath the water promised good fishing. At first, Martin was loath to stop. But realising the valuable addition a fish would make to their supplies, he called a halt. While his friends went about fishing, the warrior posted himself on guard to watch for their pursuers. Dinny sat on the edge of the bank, immersing his paws in the shallows with exclamations of delight.
Ooh-ar! Oh, bliss and joys! This be the life, Gomphin!
The mouse thief had cast a line, baited with a tiny red mudworm. In seconds, it was snatched by a voracious stickleback.
Ha! Look, matey!
He called.
I've got a bite! Come to Gomph, all greedy guts!
Martin crept up behind them. He placed a paw gently on each of his friend's shoulders as he whispered to them.
Shh! Listen to me. We are in great danger. Don't make a sound if you value our lives.
Chapter 23. Skipper sat inside the cave of a big hollow log. He faced a slim grey otter, trying hard not to look where the strange creature's tail had once been.
So then, Mask, how are you keeping, my brother?
He asked. The Mask nibbled at some otter delicacies that his brother had thoughtfully brought along.
Oh, I get by, Skip. Sometimes I'm a squirrel, sometimes a fox. I was even a half-grown badger for a while.
Skipper shook his head in amazement, gazing around the hollow log where the Master of Disguises lived alone. Many curious objects were carefully stowed there. Make-believe tails, false ears, a selection of various whiskers. The Mask watched Skipper with his odd pale eyes. Seizing a few things, he turned his back and made some swift, secret adjustments. When he turned around, Skipper's mouth fell open in disbelief.
Look, Skip, I'm a squirrel again.
The otter chieftain marvelled. This creature in front of him was surely an aged squirrel, thin, greying, but undeniably a squirrel from its bushy tail and erect ears right to the two large front upper teeth.
Strike me topsails, Mask. How'd you do it?
Oh, it's no great thing.
The Mask chuckled quietly.
Actually, I'd look more like a tree flyer if I took a little more time and care with this disguise. This is only a quick change to amuse you.
Skipper whacked his tail against the side of the log.
Well, you could fool me any time, shipmate.
Mask tossed aside the false tail and ears, spitting out the two false front teeth. He readjusted his body. He was knotted again.
Maybe I fooled you, maybe I didn't. But you're not fooling me, Skipper of Camp Willow. What do you want me to do?
Skipper sat back, folding his paws across his chest.
I have a proposition to make to you, Brother Mask. Sit still and hear me out.
Sarmina glared through the cell aperture at Gingivere. The imprisoned wildcat sat in the darkest part of the cell. His fur was tousled. Damp from the walls dewed his paws. His head drooped despairingly. Now and then his eyes would flicker rapidly. The wildcat queen brought her face close to the bars.
If you know what's good for you, you'll tell me all about how those two hedgehogs made their escape. Speak up. You must have heard or seen something. They were in the cells either side of you.
Gingivere leapt up. His voice a cracked sing-song shout.
You let them escape so you can have their bread and water. I knew you wouldn't give me any. You're keeping it all for yourself. Oh, I saw you sneaking along the passage. You let them go so that you could have all that bread and water for yourself.
Sarmina turned to Clud.
Listen to that. He's completely crazy.
She swept off down the passage. Clud stayed a moment, looking through the bars. He had never seen a completely crazy wildcat before, although he had seen his mistress dangerously close to that condition once or twice.
No bread, no water, she's keeping it for herself.
Gingivere continued his insane lament. Clud banged the door with his spear.
Quiet in there!
The sneeze came as Clud was turning away. He whirled back.
Who did that?
Gingivere grabbed a pawful of straw and sneezed into it.
Oh, I'm sick and dying, sir. The cold and damp down here. Please give me the extra rations of bread and water or I die.
Clud wrapped the door with his spear again.
Enough of that. You'll get the rations Lady Zarmina allows. So stop moaning, or I'll give you something to moan about.
As the weasel captain lumbered off down the passage, another sneeze rang out. On the wall above the cell door, two food haversacks hung from a spike driven into the rock. Ferdy and Cogs sat, one in each sack, their heads poking out like two fledgling house martins in their respective nests. Cogs reached across, trying to stifle Ferdy's snout with his paw, but another sneeze rang out.
Tissue!
Ferdy blinked and rubbed his snout.
Sorry, sir. This pack has flour in it from the scones, and it's tickling my snout.
Reaching up, Gingivere lifted his little cellmates down from their hiding place. While there were no guards about, they could play an exercise. Chib flew to the window, dropping the latest supplies in. He caught the empty sacks that Gingivere tossed up to him. In the shaft of light, the wildcat was looking strangely sane and healthy.
What news, Chib?
The Kurrim have decided that you must soon be rescued, all three of you. How they propose to do it, I don't know yet.
Gingivere nodded.
I hope they realise that the longer they wait, the more dangerous it becomes for Ferdy and Cogs.
Chib slung the empty sacks around his neck.
I'm sure they do. At present, the message is, keep on the alert and keep up your courage. You are not forgotten.
Chib flew off swiftly. Gaining the woodlands, he paused to perch on a spruce branch as he adjusted the bags about his neck for easier flight. Argilor belched dozily and glanced at the robin perched beside him. Chib gave a jump of surprise, but did not forget his manners.
Beg pardon?
The fat robin darted from the branch like a flame-tipped arrow. Argilor shifted his claws. Wearily, he dropped his eyelids back into the slumbering position. Were the small birds getting faster, or was he getting slower? The eagle dismissed the problem, reasoning that there were still plenty of soldiers in Katir who were a lot slower than a single robin redbreast. A lot tastier, too. Dinny and Gomf sat quite still at the edge of the pond as Martin whispered to them.
Now, very slowly, look to your left. Do you see the female swan over there? She's sitting on her nest with her back to us. Right. Don't look. Just take my word for it. In the open water to the other side, there's a big male swan. It's her mate. He's not seen us yet, but he's headed this way and bound to sight us if we stop here. So let's move away as silently as possible.
With great care, Gonf let the fish slip back into the water. He cut his fishing line. The three friends moved speedily, ducking behind the rushes with not a second to spare. The huge white swan glided by them serenely. He was like a ship in full sail, an awesome spectacle, the snowy white body and half-folded wings complementing perfectly the muscular serpentine neck column, surmounted by a solid orange bill and fierce black eyes. Martin shuddered. He thought of how close they had been to death. The male swan was warlike and fearless, absolute monarch of his pond. Any creature who dared trespass upon these waters while his mates sat upon the three new-hatched cygnets in their nest was fated never to see the sunset. The white colossus swept by, continuing his patrol of the pond. When he was past, the three friends slipped away. Gonf whispered a silent goodbye to the silver fish in the shallows.
We were both lucky that time, matey. Swim free.
A respectable distance from the water, Dinny untangled a streamer of duckweed from his paw.
Boy, Yoki, this un's out grandfer nil lose a dear little mole back there. I never seed a squan afore. Grrt feathery bird bag they be stan on my tunnel.
They lunched on apples and bread, supplemented with some cow parsley that Dinny had discovered. Blacktooth and Splitnose sighted the pond. They had been running ahead of Scratch after a particularly nasty bout of name-calling. The Stoughton ferret had called Scratch a frog-walloper. This seemed to touch some hidden nerve in the weasel, and he took strong objection to the insult. The pair ran off, cackling gleefully, as the weasel threw pebbles and earth-clods after them.
Come back here and say that, you cowardly custards! I'll give you frog-wallopers when I get you!
Running wide, they approached the pond at a different angle from that of the travellers. Blacktooth and Splitnose whooped with delight.
Look, a river! True Scratch!
Scratch joined them, the quarrel temporarily forgotten at the sight of the watery expanse.
That's not a river, it's a pond,
he pointed out.
This is more like it, a good fresh drink, a nice bath for our paws. Look, a swan sitting on a nest. Swan eggs! What a tasty idea!
Splitnose was not so sure.
Don't you think that bird looks a bit big, Scratch?
So what?
The weasel snorted.
There's three of us and we've got spears. I bet swan eggs are lovely.
Have you ever eaten one?
Splitnose asked.
No, I've never even seen one. But I bet they're very big and good to eat.
Well, all right, we'll back you up. How'd you get the eggs?
Easy. Just stand in the shallow and chuck our spears at the swan until it's forced to fly away. Then we rob the eggs.
Buoyed by Scratch's confidence, they waded into the shallows. The female swan watched them fearlessly. She issued a warning hiss. The would-be plunderers were enjoying themselves immensely.
Ooh, oh. Hey, Blackie, doesn't this mud feel great when you squelch it with your paws?
Splitnose called.
Aye, especially after all that running, mate. Just watch this!
Blacktooth flung his spear. It fell far short of the target. Splitnose laughed scornfully, then threw his. It went a little further, but still far short of the swan. Scratch sneered contemptuously at their efforts.
You two couldn't throw a frozen worm and hit the earth. Go and get some stones to fling at her. I can probably wade out that far and stab the bird.
The ferret and the stoat waded back to the bank and ran off to search for missiles. Scratch ventured recklessly on until the water was around his middle. There was a crackle of parting rushes behind him. Scratch turned in the water. The giant male swan blotted out everything in his vision. He didn't even get a chance to cry out or lift his spear. Scratch was dead before he knew it. Splitnose and Blacktooth returned to the water's edge, the paws full of rocks and earth clods.
How'll this little lot do, Scratch?
Scratch, where are you?
Scratchy, witchy, you old frog walloper. Come out. We know you're hiding. We can see the rushes moving.
The male swan came thundering out of the rushes in half flight, churning up a bow wave as it hissed like a nest of serpents.
Yeah!
Only the speed of raw terror and the fact that they were racing away from the pond and its nest saved the lives of the panic-stricken pair. The male swan webbed its way up onto the bank, beating its wings wide to the blue sky, hissing out its victory cry, a savage challenge to the distant runners. The female settled securely on her babes in the nest. She preened her neck feathers, smiling with just a touch of smugness. Swans never laugh aloud. Though they were a fair distance from the pond, Martin and his friends heard the anguished shouts on the breeze.
Sounds like our followers from Katia have ruffled someone's feathers, hey, Din?
Martin remarked. The mole looked grave.
Squam's headed them, we expect.
Gonf placed a paw on his heart and sang slowly.
A weasel, ferret and a stoat found a pond but had no boat. Now they can't see the waters from the inside of a swan.
Samina stood at her high window, watching the squirrels. They had descended from the trees at the woodland edge. With them were two small hedgehogs, clad in cooking pot helmets and blanket cloaks. Fortunata rapped lightly at the chamber door and entered.
Milady, oh, you've already seen them.
Samina did not even turn to look at Fortunata. She continued peering intently at the two little figures in the middle of the squirrel group.
Are they taunting us, do you think?
She asked. Fortunata joined her at the window.
No, woodlanders don't go in for that sort of display, milady.
To her surprise, Fortunata found Samina patting her approvingly.
Good thinking, fox. Shall I send out a party to try and capture them?
Fortunata shook her head.
I'd advise against it, milady. They'd only sweep off into the trees, making our soldiers look foolish. Squirrels always do.
Samina smiled. She sat up on the window ledge, winking at the vixen.
Clever, very clever, Fortunata. You aren't as dull or slow-witted as Clud and Ashleg. Listen now. I have better eyesight than you or any creature in Mossflower. I've been watching those two little hedgehogs, and there's something not quite right about them.
Not quite right, milady.
Fortunata was baffled. But she tried her best to look intelligent. Samina tapped a paw to her nose.
Exactly. They're playing little games with me, those woodlanders. But I have a game or two of my own to play. Tell me, you know these woods and their creatures better than anyone in Katia, don't you?
Fortunata was pleased that Samina was confiding in her, but she began to feel uneasy. There was often an unpleasant sting in the tale of her queen's schemes.
I was born and brought up in Mossflower country, milady. What is it you require from me?
Fortunata, we are surrounded by blunderers.
Samina's tone was that of an old and trusting friend.
You are the only one I can really rely on. I never forget those who serve me well. I haven't forgotten that you helped me to be queen with your knowledge of herbs. This is a big area to rule, and it becomes lonely. I could do with someone as wise and clever as yourself to share that rule. But first I'm going to ask you to do me a favour. Think carefully before you answer, because on that answer rests our friendship. Will you do me this favour?
The greedy fox fell headlong into the trap.
I'm yours to command, Queen Zarmina.
The wildcat ruler smiled like a cat with a bird.
Well said, friend. Now, what I want you to do is this.
Chapter 24. The Corrim was startled. Skipper strolled into Brochol, followed by a ferret. Before Lady Amber could fuss out a bow, or Bella pick up a poker to strike the foe, Skipper addressed them heartily.
Mates, don't get your ropes in a tangle. This here ferret is an otter. Meet my brother, the Mask.
The Mask bowed low. Stripping the bindings from his ears, he removed the bark slivers that sharpened his muzzle, pulled out the wicked eye teeth and undid his imitation tail. Bella pounded the sides of her chair with a heavy paw.
Wonderful! He is indeed an otter. Welcome to Brockhall, Mr. Mask.
Abbess Germaine seated the otter, placing food and drink before him.
So you are the Mask. I have lived long and seen strange things, but never one as strange as you, though I hope you will forgive me for saying so, sir.
Mask shook the abbess warmly by the paw.
It is a strange world, ma'am, you will forgive me saying, but never have I seen such friendly and gentle mice as you and your oddly dressed followers.
Skipper patted Mask on the back.
Friends, you wouldn't believe your eyes if you saw old Mask in some of the get-ups I've seen him in.
Oh, tell us, Skip.
Columbine leaned forward eagerly. Skipper took a draught of cider from Mask's cup.
I couldn't begin to tell you all this one's disguises, but just as an instance, he gave me the slip coming through the forest. I looked high and low for him. There was the old deceiver, stood right next to me, up against a tree, got up as a piece of bark, would you believe?
Spike and Posy clung to Columbine's habit, staring wide-eyed at the strange otter.
Did you really, Mr. Mask, sir?
Spike asked. Mask chuckled as he fed them a slice of apple each.
Oh, why, that's an easy one. All you need is an old piece of bark as big as yourself and the right tree. You just stand there and think the same thoughts as the tree and presto.
What others can you do, sir?
Posy wanted to know.
Oh, a fox, a squirrel, a hedgehog like you even. You name it. Otters are pretty hard to do, though. Funny tales, you see.
Could you be a bird?
Spike inquired.
Well, let's say I'm practicing that one, shall we?
A stoat or a rat, then?
Posy persisted.
No trouble. They're the easiest to do. It's all a question of studying shape, really.
Abbess Germaine was impressed.
You say you could look like a stoat, weasel, or even a fox?
The Mask winked.
Indeed I can, Marm. That's why I'm here.
Early evening shadows were beginning to lengthen across the plain. Dinny looked to the mountains on the horizon and judged the distance shrewdly.
We'm be very close to yon mountains on tomorrow, Martin.
The warrior mouse glanced toward the Masked Rock.
So we will, Din. As to how we'll cross them, I'm at a loss. Look at the size of them. They almost disappear into the sky.
Don't you worry, mateys,
Gomp said confidently.
We haven't come this far to be beaten by an old stone hill. Besides, we don't have to worry about those vermin following us. The swan's probably dealt with them.
Dinny's snout rose into the air.
Oh, he'm a smelling more water through he pores again.
What? More water, Din?
Martin asked.
Brr, aye, running water this time.
Best keep our eyes skinned for swans, eh, mateys?
Gomph warned.
Oh, or don't want to see squans no more.
Gomph was first to find the broad stream. It was not quite wide enough to be classed as a river. The mouse thief strode down the bank and recited aloud to the flowing waters.
O'er golden acres far below, our wings beat strong and true. Where deep and wet see flowing yet another snake of blue.
Martin looked to the opposite bank.
It seems peaceful enough, but it's far too wide to cross here. We'll camp here tonight and scout the bank for an easier crossing in the morning.
The mild spring evening was very pleasant by the water. Dinny scooped out a circle while Martin set flint to the steel of his broken sword and started a small fire. Gonf repaired his fishing line. Within a short time, he landed a plump young bream. The three travellers sat around the fire, watching the fish grilling in a cradle of green reeds over the flames. Firelight flickered and danced in Dinny's button-like eyes.
Warm fur! I do likes warm.
Gonf tested the fish with his knife point.
It'll be ready soon, mateys. A little loaf apiece toasted up, some cress from the water's edge, a beaker of fresh stream water, and we're snug for the night.
The stream gurgled and eddied ceaselessly toward the distant mountains as they enjoyed a spell of rest on its soft mossy bank. Splitnose and Blacktooth had wandered aimlessly. Without Scratch to direct them, they were lost. Night found the pair out upon the open plain, hungry, tired and thirsty. Splitnose lay down, snuggling sleepily against the grass. Blacktooth was restless.
Ha! I'm not sleeping out in the open again. There must be a hole or a cave hereabouts. Might be a bite of grub, too.
Oh, lie down and get some rest.
Splitnose murmured sleepily.
You're as bad as Claddle Scratch. Get some sleep and we'll see what it's like round here in the morning. I'm not moving. Might even sleep late, too.
Blacktooth moved off.
Right, you stay here. I'll be back if I can't find something better. I could swear there's water running nearby. I'll go and take a look.
Mind the swans don't eat you.
Splitnose called out, his eyes still closed. Blacktooth was back sooner than expected. He danced about, giggling quietly to himself.
Splitty! Hey, come on, Snowface, wake up! Guess what I found?
The stoat grumbled as his companion shook him awake.
Two frogs and a dandelion. Now beat it, will you? I need sleep.
The ferret could not contain his excitement.
I found a big stream, a camp, a fire and food. And those two mice in the mole.
Splitnose came awake.
Where?
Not far. Over that way a bit. Listen, if we're quick and quiet, we can take them prisoner.
The stoat leapt up.
Great! You say they've got food and a fire?
Yes, half a roast fish, packs too, full of goodies.
Blacktooth told him.
You know those woodlanders, they love their rations.
We could march them back to Katia.
Aye, could you imagine old Clad's face when we walk in with three prisoners? The Queen would probably make us generals. Oh, I'd give that Clad a few dirty jobs to do. I'd make him jump.
Right, Blackie mate, lead me to him.
They sneaked silently across to the riverbank, armed with their spears. The three friends lay asleep around the fire, unaware of the eyes that watched them from the top of the bank. Fortunata struck deeper into Mossflower, aware that Sarmina was watching her from the high chamber window. The vixen had cast off her borrowed finery from Katia, reverting to the frayed old healer's cloak and bag of herbal remedies. She leaned heavily upon an ash staff. Fortunata was more suited to this type of work. She preferred subterfuge to warfare. Besides, the rewards promised were greater. Sarmina moved from the window to ring her table bell. Clud entered, saluting with shield and spear.
Yes, your majesty.
Get somebody to clean this room up. It's filthy. Drill the troops and keep them on the alert. They're not here to eat me out of house and home. Oh, get a foraging party together. We must keep something in the larders if we want to outlast the woodlanders.
Clud saluted again.
It shall be done, milady.
The wildcat queen settled back in her chair. Now was the time to play the waiting game. Columbine lay behind a screen of bushes, nibbling a green hazelnut. The mouse maid often volunteered to go on watch outside Brockhall, imagining herself to be the first to sight the traveller's return. That gonf! He would probably come back singing at the top of his voice.
I'm back, Columbine. Yes, now is the hour. My good friends and I will be saving Mossflower.
Or some such cheery air. Columbine lay watching sun motes dancing through dappled patterns of green leaves, dreaming of her thief. Then she sighted the fox. It was a vixen, dressed like a journeying healer. The fox cast about, sniffing here, inspecting a scuffed leaf there, obviously searching for somebody or something. Columbine slid silently away from her hiding place. Once she was out of the fox's vision, she took to her paws, dashing headlong back to Brockhall. Shooing some little ones inside, she shut the door and bolted it. It was lunchtime. Loam Hedge Mice were serving up hazelnut cloister pudding with willow herb sauce. Columbine made straight for Bella.
Fox! Fox, coming this way!
She panted. Skipper put a restraining paw on her.
Whoa there! What fox? Coming from where?
Out in the woods. Coming from the northwest, sniffing and probing. It's a vixen. She'll find a way here soon unless we stop her.
Lady Amber mopped up sauce with a crust.
A vixen, hey? Did you recognise her, Columbine?
Oh, yes. It's the one they call Fortunata, though she's disguised herself up a bit. I recognised her at the ambush.
An old raggedy cloak and hood?
Bella interrupted.
Together with a bag of herbs and a staff?
Columbine nodded.
The old pilgrim healer disguise. Wearing a bit thin, eh, Mask?
The badger chuckled dryly. The otter looked up from his pudding.
What are you going to do about her?
Lady Amber reached for a quiver.
A swift arrow in the right place should save any argument.
Skipper poured his sling.
Either that or a sharp rock on her stem.
Mask stood up, patting her full stomach.
Miss Badger, why don't you let me deal with this? It may help with our escape plans for the prisoners.
Bella pushed food toward Columbine.
Here, little one, have some lunch. Go on, Mask, tell us the plan.
The otter had his back to them. He was selecting disguises.
I say let her come. See what she wants, but don't let her know who I am. Pretend that I'm a newcomer.
When he turned to face the Corran, Mask was indeed a newcomer. He was transformed into the most evil, slim, grey old fox they had ever seen. The mask slid into Bella's study to complete his disguise.
Find the right tail, rub a little brown dust into my coat, and see to the finer bits. Ha! She won't be able to tell me from her own grandpa when I'm finished.
Right, we've got you! Don't try anything funny or we'll skewer this mole!
Martin opened his eyes. The ferret and the stoat were standing over Dinny, their spear points at his throat. The warrior mouse was about to jump instinctively for them, but Gonf discouraged him.
Do as he says, matey. They've taken us by surprise.
All three lay quite still. Blacknose smirked with satisfaction.
I'll keep the mole pinned down, Splitty. Look through that pack over there and see if you can find some cord.
Splitnose scuttled off and rummaged in the pack.
Even better, mate. Look, a rope,
he called.
Give it here and keep your spear on the mole. Stick him if he moves.
Blacktooth wound the rope round the travellers. Binding them together, he tugged the end to make sure it was tightly secured. Picking up his spear, he strutted around them.
Ha! You're our prisoners now. You'll pay for breaking the laws of Katir and leading us on a wild goose chase. Be still.
Splitnose was emptying the supply packs out.
Oh, look! Apples, bread, cheese, pie.
Blacktooth threw extra fuel on the fire and crammed food wolfishly into his mouth while menacing them with his spear.
Aye, this is more like it, Splinty!
He enthused.
Come and get warm by the fire!
Gonf winked at Martin and whispered,
Leave it to me, matey. I'll settle these two idiots.
Blacktooth yanked sharply on the rope's end.
No talking there! One more peep out of you and you'll be sorry, do you hear me?
Gonf shrugged as best as he could.
Don't worry, Captain. You've got us all right. But please don't eat all our supplies. We'll have nothing left to keep alive on.
Splitnose threw an apple core at Gonf and bit into a cheese.
Oh, stop moaning, Mouse. Look at us. We've lived on one skinny crust and grass for the last few days. This is good cheese. Hey, a fruitcake. By the claws, that'll do for me.
Come on, greedy guts, offer me.
Blacktooth prodded Splitnose with his spear.
Get your own fat belly.
Splitnose retorted.
Why, you gluttonous worm!
Ouch! You keep that spear point away from me, rotten gums.
That's the stuff, matey.
Gonf called out encouragingly.
You show him the store to the bosses.
Blacktooth was about to stab Gonf with his spear when Splitnose jabbed him in the bottom with his spear points. Martin took Blacktooth's side.
Don't let him do that to you, Ferret. Get him!
Dinny supported Splitnose.
He be nowt but a girt bully. Jump on Ferret's tunnel, Scoot.
Blacktooth cracked Splitnose across the head with his spear shaft. Splitnose retaliated by stabbing Blacktooth in the paw. The three friends egged them on with loud shouts.
You've got him now, stab!
That's it! Keep him pinned down!
Get his throat with your teeth!
Shove him in the fire, quick!
Filled with blind rage, the stoat and ferret battled all over the campsite, rolling through the fire, splashing in the shallows, stumbling against the captives, oblivious to all except the desire to slay.
Take that, stoat swine!
Oh, you won't push me around anymore, ferret face! Get this!
Blacktooth fell, pierced by his opponent's spear. Splitnose backed off, dropping his spear and stumbling further into the shallows. Blacktooth pulled himself upright and staggered toward his foe. Splitnose blundered into deeper water, unarmed, holding his paws out pleadingly.
Plecky, no, I didn't mean it.
The ferret tottered unsteadily into the water, lifted the spear to throw, and fell dead into the shallows. Splitnose kept backing off as if in a daze.
I didn't mean to. Blackie, honest, you can have half the...
Suddenly, he was gone. All that remained...